Iowa is ranked one of the highest binge drinking states in the country. It's estimated the cost of binging to our state alone is about $2 billion. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we'll look to where many say the behavior originates, our state colleges.
We'll split like a fifth and then we'll go to the bars. I black out almost every single time I drink.
How do you combat attitudes like these? We'll look at the progress that's been made and what's at the heart of binge drinking culture. We'll also hear how for some, binge drinking in high school or college often leads to a lifetime of substance abuse. Binge drinking on campus and in our communities. First, this news. I'm Ben Kiefer with River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Today, you're listening to an encore edition of the program. Our state, Iowa, ranks as one of the highest binge drinking states in the country. And according to the Center for Disease Control, the yearly cost from that excessive alcohol consumption in our state, $2 billion approximately. We want to examine in our first half hour, the place many say binge drinking behavior originates, our state colleges and the efforts to combat binge drinking culture on our campuses. Joining us to do that in this first half hour, Tom Rocklin is with us, Vice President for Student Life at the University of Iowa, also co-chair of the Partnership for Alcohol Safety. Tom Rocklin, thank you. Welcome to our program again.
Thank you, Ben. It's good to be here.
Also in our studio in Iowa City, George Etri. He is an Iowa City business owner, owns a number of businesses in the community, also a member of the Partnership for Alcohol Safety. George, welcome to our program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'd like to start out by having us dive in. And for those who are not acquainted with what a drinking culture is, some of the attitudes, let's listen to some of the voices expressing some of those attitudes in this short audio postcard of the drinking scene in Iowa City. 2 weeks ago, River to River producer Emily Woodbury went out on a Saturday night in Iowa City around 9 o'clock to find out how people were spending their night downtown, if they were drinking, how much they consumed. And this is a random survey of the people she spoke with. Everyone who stopped to talk was drinking that night, and they were all either going to college at the University of Iowa or were visiting and in their early to mid-20s. Here's a collection of what they had to say.
Are you guys drinking tonight?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
I am. Yes, I am.
What are you guys having?
A little bit of everything.
Well, since it's game day, we're drinking a bunch of beer earlier, but most of the time I drink whiskey and she drinks rum.
I had some Busch Light.
I had Smirnoff and Red Bull, actually.
Some whiskey and Cokes.
How long have you guys been in Iowa City, and what do you think of Iowa City's drinking culture?
Well, I go to school here and I've been here about 4 years, and it gets pretty crazy sometimes.
It's pretty good. I'm not going to lie, when I'm looking for something to do, I'm always looking for Iowa City to pull through for me, so it's pretty good.
It's kind of like the only thing to do here.
Oh, I want to go that far. I think if you want to do something else, like there's a lot of clubs and stuff, but like, I mean, like, I think it's like normal for a college kid to just like drink on the weekends.
I've been here for the day, and every time I come to Iowa City, I drink more than I drink anywhere else. Because of the tailgating and because of the culture here, like, it's just such a fun college city and different bars. It's unique and it's just a really good time.
Everyone comes to Iowa shitty to get shitty.
I've been here for like 6 hours and I've been drinking the whole time, so I enjoy it. I drink with everybody. I drink with this girl, I drink with that guy. Do it all. So it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I think the issue too is that our bar scene is so concentrated that there just tends to be a ton of people in one area. You know, that doesn't help the rep that our school gets. So
I've actually seen, like, I have friends that their parents come down and drink with them, and it's like their parents aren't mad at them. Their parents are like, yeah, let's go out, you've been studying for so long, you know, it's why not. And I like it, it's a fun time.
We tailgated and started drinking at 7 in the morning.
Oh wow. So how many drinks do you guys would you say you had so far today?
15
tonight. As in like the sun went down, or as in like since the sun came up today?
Today.
Maybe 12 or so.
I'd say we're in 30 12. Range.
Probably 7.
4.
How much do you guys usually drink on a night, on a weekend night?
A lot.
Like, we'll split, like, a fifth, and then we'll go to the bars. Yeah. I black out almost every single time I drink.
I don't know. I'd probably stay at, like, 10, 11, 12 to get really good. Like, have a night where, like, dude, I had a blast last night.
What's a healthy amount to drink on weekends?
It's too hard of a question to answer. There is just too many factors.
You have to know how much you've eaten, how much you slept, you know, like how much is going to affect you. Like, I don't know. For me,
here's a bit of advice for people. I always eat before. I drink a lot of water before. And then when I'm done drinking, I drink, you know, we go out and get drunk and then we drink a lot of water and then go to sleep. So don't avoid drinking. I mean, eating, sorry. Do drink. No, don't drink.
And water.
Drink water.
Our producer Emily Woodbury out surveying people a couple weekends ago on a Saturday night in Iowa City just to give us have us plunge into the drinking culture of Iowa City and give us an idea of what it's like, I'm sure, on other campuses across our state. Tom Rockland, Vice President for Student Life at the University of Iowa. These are voices, familiar things that you know well because this is a problem you've been combating for years here. What strikes you in that collection of voices in terms of the attitudes that you hear that is really the heart of the problem that you've been addressing?
One theme through there is that we have some students who are taking big risks, and that concerns me a lot. The other thing, though, that I hear is a perception that everybody does it. And, of course, we do have a lot of students who drink in ways that are unsafe. But, of course, if you ask people outside a bar if they've been drinking, you usually find a lot of drinkers there. And there are a lot of other students spending the evening in other ways. The other thing that in a way strikes me, and not so much from what we just heard, but from my own time downtown in the evenings, is the change that we've seen over the last 5 years. So mm-hmm. that downtown is different today than it was 5 years ago, and I'm pleased with the progress.
You have a survey to back that up. According to a health behavior and wellness study conducted this year by the University of Iowa, more than 30,000 students, I guess, were polled here. What did you find?
So this is a sample of those 30,000 students, and what we found is, you know, on our key indicators, things like have you engaged in what we would call binge drinking in the last 2 weeks, we see a decline from 70% down to 54.1%, and all our other indicators are showing us the same thing.
This is self-reporting when you reach out to students and they do something online or otherwise?
It is. It's a paper survey that they take, and, you know, it's possible that they're telling us something other than the truth, but since we're looking at change over time, I don't think the way that they're telling us something over the truth is other than the truth has changed.
2009, 70% reporting binge drinking down to 54%. It's an improvement. Still, 54% of the student body reporting binge drinking.
Absolutely. It's a big concern for us. We've made a lot of progress. And at the same time, we have a whole lot of work left to do.
Mm-hmm. And 2009 is an important year because when we look at 2009, that was prior to the introduction of an important ordinance in Iowa City. Tell us about that.
Sure. People might not understand because it is a little bit unusual that prior to 2009, people could be in bars below the drinking age. And, of course, they weren't supposed to drink while they were in the bars, but they did. And in 2009, the community decided that wasn't what we wanted to be, and passed an ordinance that changed that. And that ordinance has now survived two referendum challenges over the last 5 years. So I think the community has spoken about what they want to see in terms of alcohol safety.
Mm-hmm. George Entry, Iowa City business owner, you've been around for decades in this city as a, I understand, as a high school student, as a college student, and mm-hmm. as a business owner for 13 years in Iowa City. First of all, what did you hear in that collection of voices that points to the heart of the problem that you're on board with as part of this partnership?
Well, the one thing that stuck out to me is there's a lot of visitors who come down, and a lot of visitors' voices were in that. The culture for the visitors takes a little bit longer to change. I know mm-hmm. that the students have changed, and all this stuff takes time. But downtown as a whole has changed. But the thing that stands out to me is the safety issue. Anytime you're talking about young people and drinking hard alcohol and whether eating or not eating, there's a lot of safety issues that concern me. So we work with our staff at our different restaurants on how to deal with customers, whether they're adults or underage, and when they come to college, how they should be careful even just walking home, because a lot of our restaurants close pretty late, so they're walking home in the middle of all this. So things they can do to avoid certain crowds and how to be as safe as possible.
So the people working in your restaurants will actually give advice to students, or what do you
mean? We'll train, we'll work with the people that we hire on how they can get home and how they, when they get off work, the best ways of getting home. On a football game, we'll try to get some of the younger kids out of there earlier so they're not in the middle of all the mix of everybody downtown.
Mm-hmm. You own a collection of businesses. A few years ago, the city denied a liquor license to a bar that you owned, et cetera, because I understand too many PAWLA violations, possession of alcohol under the legal age. So this was – you're an owner – we're an owner, and you have restaurants now that include drinking as part of the menu. But here, how has your attitude towards this drinking culture changed in the time that you've experienced the ordinance change and just seeing soaking up the atmosphere and the problem that it creates?
I think my attitude's changed, and the whole downtown as a whole has changed. There's a lot more communication between bar owners, liquor license owners, the city, the university. The Partnership Alcohol Safety Committee is a great opportunity for people to talk. There's a lot more people living downtown. Downtown as a whole, there's film scene. There's more things to do besides drinking. A lot of the bars have closed, so there's a lot less bars. So I think the culture as a whole is slowly changing to where there are more things to do than just go out and drink for young people and adults.
Mm-hmm. Give us that bar owner perspective, because they can be painted as the bad guy here, and that would be you in this case.
Sure.
in some sense here. What is driving most bar owners to have just drink specials that are really quite outlandish, that you can consume that much alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes down to money, and everybody's fighting for the few people that can go out. But there are a lot of responsible bar owners, especially in Iowa City, and the people who weren't as responsible seem to be getting more and more responsible. But the city's done a good job of the ordinances on what you can do and what you can't do with drink specials, which has limited a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody as a whole is slowly changing their mentality on drinking and trying to find different things, whether it's live music or games or things they can do to engage young people without just centered in around alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Tom Rocklin, has that been a big part of it, in addition to the 21-only ordinance, that people have something else to do? I think what popped out in that collection of voices is that there's nothing else to do here. We know that's absolutely not true, but that can be a perception of a student who's looking for an exciting time, I guess.
It can be, and I was glad to hear her friend tell her that she was wrong, that there's lots to do.
Yes, she did.
In Iowa City. It's something the university's concentrated on. We've put an awful lot of work into providing alternative activities, things that students design for students, and those have been extremely popular. But I also think I want to echo what George said. The whole community has changed, and that's the only way this problem can be addressed, is if we all get together and find ways that we can work together, the things that we hold in common. And that's really worked in this case.
Mm-hmm. How are you measuring that improvement, besides the one survey that you had of self-reporting by students, Tom?
So, you know, the other thing that we can look at, and it's imperfect, is we can look at arrests and calls for service that the police have. And we find that calls for service related to alcohol and assault and a variety of other complaints have dropped since the ordinance passed. And I think the ordinance is part of it, and the cooperation is another part of it.
George.
Yeah, I can tell you from being a business owner downtown and living downtown that the culture downtown has dramatically changed. I mean, it's really shifted, and it's really nice to see. I mean, having places like Utopia and Molly's Cupcakes and places like that are open later, like now at 10, 11, 12, it's not just a bar scene. I mean, it's a night and day difference. I don't know what all the stats say, but just going out there and being in it, it's a night and day difference. I mean, you still have your problems.
Yep.
And a lot of these people who we heard in the thing, they might be freshmen or sophomore who just got here, who haven't quite experienced everything about Iowa City. A lot of times these kids will go home for the summer and they'll come back and there'll be new things like film scene and different restaurants that it takes them a while to expose to them. So sometimes they might come back and think there's nothing new, but there's always newer and newer things downtown.
George Etrey is with us, an Iowa City business owner, recalling, talking about tackling this alcohol, excessive alcohol binging problem that is not only in Iowa City, but in campuses across the state and also connected with communities across the state, George. Yeah.
Yep. And one more thing that stuck out to me was the parent issue, the parents drinking with their students. We deal with that a lot at the restaurants, and we just dealt with it this past weekend, where I would say 90% of our problems that are alcohol-related are with adults, people over 40, on these weekends.
When you say problems, what type of problems do you mean with people over 40?
Loud, obnoxious, they thought they left their credit card, they can't find their credit card, falling asleep, different issues like that. It's not so much the students. The students will be on their best behavior, especially when they're out in public, but a lot of time it's the adults who want to come down and let loose.
Maybe relive some of their party years from college. Katie Titus is with us in our Ames studio, a senior at Iowa State University, also opinion editor at the Iowa State Daily. Katie Titus, welcome to our program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You wrote a recent opinion piece about the decision to cancel the ISU Spring Visha celebration due to the unruly behavior that has had in several years, rioting, excessive drinking. In the piece, you wrote, quote, "We murdered a 92-year tradition. Many people are upset about President Stephen Leith's final decision to end Visha, but we really have no one to blame but ourselves when you look at the whole picture." Fill us in on the whole picture in a nutshell at ISU, similar to what you're hearing from the folks in Iowa City, right?
Definitely. I think that students take on the mentality of that because alcohol is so accessible in the stores and you can get it at the grocery store, anybody that's over 21, and that it's legal, that students have the perception that it's okay to drink large amounts of it. I think that that really showed the night of the riots in Ames, because there were so many students that were intoxicated. Alcohol can kind of give you the mentality that you're invincible, or that you can do whatever you want because you can blame it on the drinking. Mm-hmm. And I think that many students during the riot had that mentality.
What fosters that damaging drinking culture, in your opinion? Is it in the media and pop culture?
I definitely think that it is. Celebrities are drinking. Upperclassmen are drinking. So to freshmen, that looks appealing. Parents, like they said, is a problem in Iowa City. The same thing happens in Ames. Parents are okay with students drinking. And I feel like it starts at a younger and younger age. It might be susceptible to high school students. I know in my high school, like, there were high school students drinking, and that carries over in your college years and into adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Tom Rockland, you wanted to jump in here.
Just want to amplify what Katie is saying. You know, 40% of our students arrive on campus from high school already drinking. So this is something that started well before they got to college for many of our students.
And so drinking, we presume, very much undercover in high school. And then when they get into this college atmosphere, especially prior to a 21 only ordinance, it can come out from the dark shadows. And in many cases, we know freshmen, sophomore, be celebrated in quotes.
I think that does happen, Ben. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to go back to the pop culture here, because Katie Titus, in recent years, the songs gracing pop and hip-hop's top 40 list are often about drinking, and blatantly so. Songs like LMFAO's song Shots, which encourages listeners to take shots of liquor and blame it on the alcohol, by rapper T-Pain. Popular drinking songs for today's youth. Here's something that, if you're not in touch with that type of music, a stand-up comedian, Aziz Ansari. He's making fun of these songs in his act, Buried Alive. Let's listen. You'll get a sense of it.
There's this new kind of song that's come out that kind of brainwashes people into thinking they're having a great time. Think about it. What kind of song's playing anytime you walk into a club now? It's always something like, "This is the best night of your life. This is the best night of your life. You're gonna have a good time. You're gonna have a good time. You're drinking with your friends and casual acquaintances. Keep drinking, keep drinking. It'll help you have a better time. It'll help you have a better time. Vodka, tequila, those are some options. Keep drinking, keep drinking. It'll help you lower your standards. It'll help you lower your standards. I know this night seems the same as many recent nights, but this one is very different because it's the best night of your life."
Comedian Aziz Ansari there. Katie Titus, so that is the message that students are receiving. How did people receive your opinion that they only have themselves to blame for the end of Visha, this 92-year tradition?
I'm sure that many students disagreed with that, but I also had some students that did agree and alumni that did agree. A lot of students are taking the blame on themselves, and they know that, like, drinking during the riot helped lead to the destruction of property and throwing glass bottles at police officers. I don't think that many students here are crazy enough to throw a glass bottle at a police officer while they're sober.
Mm-hmm. Have you taken part in binge drinking, Katie?
Yes, I drink on the weekends, like most of the other college students.
So you know of which you speak?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the most, what are the most effective prevention tools that a community or a university or a college has in its bag to stem this binge drinking and heavy drinking?
Like, what can we do to prevent it, or what
exactly?
Causes it?
Yeah, okay. We have Tom Rocklin here. He's been scratching his head and coming up with solutions for years that have been to some degree effective. But you're part of the culture there. What do you think is most effective for students?
I think that students finding a sense of community with their friends or students from different classes, and like finding other activities to do that are also fun that don't involve drinking, like going to a game or like playing frisbee golf, something else that they can do as a group that doesn't have to involve drinking.
George Entry.
Yeah, and I think accessibility has a lot to do with that. So the less bars that have been in Iowa City or the spaces that were bars that have now transformed a film scene or cupcake places or yogurt places, I think the less accessibility, the better.
Mm-hmm. Syracuse University, we heard this is news from a few weeks ago, has claimed the title of the nation's top party school. The latest ranking by the Princeton Review, which is based on a nationwide survey of 130,000 students. Syracuse, Tom Rocklin, took the number one spot from the University of Iowa. University of Iowa ranked number two, also in that top five, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in there too. So what is left to do to further change the culture, the ordinances, the law, the attitudes?
I think we have lots of work left to do now. I will point out that reputation always lags reality, and so I'm looking forward to us dropping off that list that Princeton Review puts together. We have more work to do in creating new social norms so that students understand that they may think, and they do think, that everybody's out getting drunk, and it's just not true. So I think our next big challenge is to connect students with other students who are interested in activities that don't involve drinking and build that sense of community. You know, our alcohol incidents in residence halls are down dramatically this fall as we start up. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that all of our students are members of living learning communities now and have a direct connection to the people around them.
Mm-hmm. Katie, before we have to go, what if you go to a college party there at ISU and you choose not to drink? Is that a problem?
I feel like there's definitely a lot of peer pressure, and there's like a social stigma for students to drink at college parties. So it is hard to be sober, but I have a friend that does it every time, and she like has learned to just ignore that. It works for her.
So it's going to be a lag for many years, Tom Rocklin, this will occur, and we have to have parents on board too, because we heard from George. The attitudes that come from the parents visiting, alumni perhaps. Huh?
Yeah, it's the parents, the community, the city. And that's the great thing about the past 5 years in Iowa City is that everybody's on board to change the culture. It just takes time. It takes time.
Okay, thank you very much for this conversation. George Entry is an Iowa City business owner, member of the Partnership for Alcohol Safety. Also, Tom Rocklin with us, Vice President for Student Life at the University of Iowa, co-chair of the Partnership for Alcohol Safety. We look forward to further updates from you, Tom, and from you, George. Thank you. Katie in Des Moines, thank you for joining us. Very quickly, what's in the future for you as you graduate?
Hopefully an internship and then a job. So.
Okay, good luck getting that, Katie Titus.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll continue talking about drinking. We'll talk with Dr. Michael Takis. He's a clinical associate professor of emergency medicine, about the long-term and short-term damages from binge drinking. I'm Ben Kiefer with River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Today, you're listening to an encore edition of the program. Talking about binge drinking in the state, did you know Iowa ranks as one of the highest binge drinking states in the country. We're asking this hour why, and also examining what seems to be efforts to make a dent, successfully so, denting this drinking culture and all of the negative repercussions that result from having a binge drinking culture. A couple of messages from listeners in our first half hour, part of a message from Julie in Des Moines. As a parent of a high school girl, looking at colleges, I am very scared to have her look at a larger state school where we know that other risky behavior is associated with excessive drinking. A tweet from Derek in Ames in reference to the guest that said limiting bars and access to alcohol would help the problem. I refer him to the years 1920 to 1933. Thank you for that, Derek. Of course, 20 to 33, the era of prohibition. Let's talk with a couple of other guests. First of all, Dr. Michael Takis is with us, a clinical associate professor of emergency medicine at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, where he's also an emergency room physician. Dr. Takis, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
We talked with you prior to the 21 ordinance in Iowa City, and that seems to be a major sort of a milestone. At least a change, according to our other two guests there. Let me turn to you and talk, first of all, before I ask about change, what types of visits to the ER do you see connected with binge drinking? Because, of course, alcohol poisoning would be one, but it goes far beyond that, doesn't it?
It sure does. For the college students, the most common reasons why we would see them in the emergency room would be vomiting or blackouts. And often these blackouts, students could be found passed out at a bar or a park bench or a bus stop, and they're brought in by ambulance. And so it does significantly impact the student with an ER visit and, unsafe for them. Even more severe problems for them would be head injury or broken bones from falling. Some students come to the emergency room. They're self-medicating with alcohol for depression or other mental illness. And so we do see quite a variety of alcohol-related emergencies.
Mm-hmm. River to River listeners, tell us about the drinking culture at your college, if you attended college. Did the party end after you graduated? Did you see, do you see in your experience a link between the experiences in high school and college and later in life? And what do you think are the most effective ways to prevent binge drinking? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. So we talked about the span of time, specifically focusing on Iowa City as one of the nation's top party schools, according to the Princeton Review. The span of time, 2009, prior to the introduction of a 21-only ordinance, which banned 19- and 20-year-olds from bars after 10 p.m., seen as an accomplishment by the community and a real agent of change. What about you in the ER, the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics? Has that decreased the number of ER visits?
Yes, it has. Anything the community or the school does to implement a program for change seems to work. And I think it's a continuous process that both the school and the Iowa City community recognizes is a continual process and needs to always be thinking what can we do more. I first noticed this back in 2007 when I first came here. The culture on Thursday nights was to go out and party and get drunk. And, of course, many of these students ended up in the emergency room. And then the university recognized this, and they increased the number of Friday morning classes, and the effects were immediate. We saw many less emergencies on Thursday nights, and it became a much more pleasant place to work, which, you know, is a secondary benefit. But from primary benefit, students were at less harm.
So Thursday nights prior to having Friday classes or even Friday nights, the ER is full of what type of people? The drunken people? People who...
Yeah, on Thursday nights prior to 2008 or 2007, I can't remember which year, the there was always six, seven, eight college students in the emergency room drunk, either from vomiting or passing out or in an assault. And this was the pre-21 ordinance. We would get a lot of their friends visiting either from high school or from college. And just looking to party and sort of, you know, cause problems to some extent. at least those are the ones we would see in the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And so we saw a lot of a very high volume of alcohol-related emergencies on Thursday nights. Well, now they're very infrequent.
What about this last weekend? We had a big home game, Iowa State coming to battle the Hawkeyes. It turned out Iowa State came out on top in that battle. But as far as what happened downtown and in the surrounding Iowa City area, what did your emergency room look like?
I didn't get specific numbers from this weekend, but from the first two weekends, my colleagues have said that the number of alcohol-related emergencies has been less and over previous years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you're chiming in with the success to some degree that we heard also in our first half hour. There is progress being made.
Yeah, definitely. College students have more options, things to do outside of drinking. They recognize the negatives of drinking through alcohol education programs, including Alcohol EDU. That's mandatory for all freshmen. There's programs that Tom Rockland has developed. And if a student gets in trouble, not that we would ever report any emergencies to Tom Rockland, people that came to the emergency room, that's HIPAA-related data. And the emergency room is a safe haven for students. They can never we will never report them to the university. But if they're arrested or something like that, Tom Rockland will get the reports from the newspaper, and he will call parents and help reinforce a parental aspect of their behavior.
In 2010, that was the first year of the 21-only ordinance passed by the city, banning 19- and 20-year-olds from bars after 10 p.m. Now, opponents, when we talked years ago, opponents of the 21-only ordinance said a lot of student drinking has shifted or would shift to house parties where they may be less likely to call 911 unless someone is very, very sick. Whereas they said in the downtown, there were bar employees that would help seek help or get police officers around. Is that a valid point that some of the emergency visits are not happening because they're in houses and they don't get the emergency care that they did in prior?
I think a lot of that is speculation. I know one of the things that we were worried about were students that would binge drink that were underage and then go to a bar and hang out, and they'd be very, very intoxicated. And a lot of times with caffeine, Monster Energy drinks in their system, and then the caffeine wear off and the severe effects of high alcohol would set in. At house parties, not that I, you know, in favor of them, I think people are more likely to maybe drink in moderation. But when going to bars and try to game the system and drink heavily before going was one of our big worries, and we still see some cases from that.
College students, not only the problem drinkers here, but we heard visitors to Iowa City were a big problem also to other campuses. A community, a city nightlife gets a reputation, a drinking reputation, and it sort of acts like a magnet, doesn't it, pulling in people from surrounding communities on certain evenings?
It does. We do see a lot of visitors in the emergency room drunk. And unfortunately, a lot of them are in the emergency room due to assaults and other more serious crimes, drunk driving. College students, it would be extremely rare for a college student to be, University of Iowa college student to be in our emergency room drunk driving because they all walk to class and don't use transportation. But for the visitor, that's where that becomes a problem.
Have you seen the drop in the number of visitors having to come to the ER in the past 4 or 5 years?
Yes. Yes, especially the college-age visitors. We've seen a definite drop. The middle-aged visitor, I haven't really looked at that data.
Okay. Dr. Michael Takis is with us, Clinical Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine, ER physician at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, talking about the dents that have been made in the binge drinking culture, some success seeing on different fronts, looking at Iowa City because it has been named also the one of the top party schools in the nation. This Facebook post from Seth in Rock Island: I went to Illinois State for my BA and MS, and there was certainly pressure to go out and drink excessively. Not being much of a drinker and being fairly uncomfortable with large parties initially posed a real social barrier, but after a while, I met a number of individuals with similar interests, and we hung out, skated, played games, etc. Even then, at night, there was less to do. We avoided the areas around the campus on the weekends. That's from Seth in Rock Island. Thank you for that. We're going to have Lorraine join us from our Des Moines studio, Des Moines residents, and also Al-Anon member. Lorraine, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for coming into our studio. Al-Anon, an organization of relatives and friends of alcoholics who believe their lives have been affected by someone else's drinking. Lorraine, we're not giving your last name because the organization is based on the principle of anonymity. You are here to tell us the story of alcoholism in your family, specifically your daughter's struggle with the disease. Since the age of 16, she's now 46, is that right?
Yes.
When did you see the first indications that your daughter was heavily into drinking?
When she was in high school, she had she would come home and she would always have a friend with her. And they would if you ever have had a child in a car and they have been drinking, you find out that they'll talk, and then there's nothing more to say. And you can smell the alcohol. And then the two of them, the two girls together, they'll go in the bedroom and you won't hear anything. And then after a while, that changes. And then my daughter would come home and she would be drunk and she wouldn't have her keys and I'd have to wait up for her. And then she would say things to me that her father had said to me. She would call me names and she would be abusive toward me. Mm-hmm. And then you have to make some other decisions in your life about, at least I did, about what I was going to do because I was a member of Al-Anon and I didn't have to take abuse anymore. So there were other changes that
How early, I understand your daughter is still not completely out of
alcohol
problems. Mm-hmm. How early did the intervention start, the treatment start?
When she went to our primary purpose when she was 16, she had been drinking before that. So she really did start a little bit earlier, sometime around probably the age of 13. So she went to our primary purpose, which was a treatment center for young adults in Des Moines, Iowa at that time. And she did go through that course of learning about alcoholism and its effect on her. And then she went to a halfway house in Ames because she still was someone I did not want to have in the house. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I could handle her in the house.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to toss her out of the house?
I did eventually, yes, mm-hmm. because if she wanted to live with me, she had choices. She needed to go to her meetings. I mean, it's up to her. If she wanted to live in my house, she needed to go to meetings. She needed to eat dinner at the table. Pardon me, to be at the table for dinner. It didn't matter if she ate or not. And then because we did go to church on Sunday, she had to go to church. She didn't have to do anything when she was at church. She didn't have to listen. But she did have to follow those rules, and she chose not to follow those rules.
Your daughter now 46.
46.
What is her life like now?
Small, very small. She cannot work. She cannot, when she's drinking, she cannot walk. She is a drunk driver, so she does not have a license at this time. She cannot ride a bicycle because her legs don't work because of alcohol. She has fallen down many times. She's got a chipped tooth. Someone who is very, very beautiful. She's half Swedish. She's a very, very beautiful woman, and it's hard to see her like that. And what alcohol does to a woman— because she drinks so excessively, because life for her is very difficult. She drinks excessively. And what it does to a woman's face is alcohol makes a lot of wrinkles because it pushes all the moisture to the top. And she's, you know, not as pretty as she could be.
Lorraine, I hear the pain in your voice, and thank you for sharing that with us. And please tell us, why are you sharing this so publicly? You're anonymous in this case,
yes. But...
Who are you most wanting to touch out there in our listening audience?
Families who suffer with children who have alcohol problems or husbands who have alcoholism. Those people who feel like it's our fault. It's Al-Anon is for anyone whose life has been affected by someone else who drinks. So Al-Anon is for people who say, drinking has affected my life, therefore I can go to Al-Anon. Drinking has affected my life. For the children that... I have a grandson who is my daughter's son, and I see the lack of his self-esteem. I see that he doesn't really have a grasp on how to work out problems. You know, I see him seeking approval from other people. I see him looking to himself for answers for his parents' problems. And he can't help them, you know. And right. I had to realize that, and Al-Anon helped me to see that.
And it helped you to see also patterns. What we're talking about today is perhaps the role that colleges, community colleges, universities play in, you know, sending young people to colleges and then establishing a pattern, a routine, a habit of drinking. Let me ask perhaps Dr. Takis there too. From what we know about drinking, is that a really you could take one individual, an average individual. We know some are predisposed to alcoholism, but it really matters the atmosphere that you put them in and what kind of atmosphere they enjoy their free time in.
Yeah, I mean, some people, you know, it's just hard to predict who's going to turn into a long-term alcoholic. And that's why it's, you know, alcohol is such a dangerous thing. And so, you know, drinking in moderation is always very important. And, you know, being around friends that, you know, that care and having a good support structure is always very important. And that's what, you know, one of the things that is just so, so difficult with alcohol, I'm sure Lorraine has experienced, is that it, you know, it consumes the person and they do everything to hide it. And it's just so hard to predict when just social drinking is going to turn into alcoholism.
Mm-hmm. This email from Nate, one of our listeners: I believe the binge drinking patterns start in high school. Parents need to be talking to their kids and often about drinking. Also, it's up to the parents to be more watchful of their homes when they're gone. Lorraine, looking back, would there have been other avenues of intervention that you would have chosen with the many years of hindsight you have now?
As far as intervention went, I think what a gift that program was at Our Primary Purpose. And then the halfway house in Ames was another great gift. And my daughter had a running shot at being able to stay sober. And she was able to achieve 3 years of sobriety. But alcohol is such a cunning, powerful, and baffling disease. It's alcoholism. And it doesn't choose what kind of victims it has, because my first husband was a drinking alcoholic, and I thought, oh, good, I've divorced him. Now I will be able to, you know, alcoholism no longer will affect me. But it did. Is there other things that could happen? I think that we did everything we could. I had my daughters, both of my daughters, in Alateen. I do have a daughter that does not drink. And has not caused me any problems. I don't know if she does drink. She may have a drink now and again, but she does not have an alcohol issue.
You were in our studio also in the first half hour that we didn't hear you, but we played a lot of young voices, voices expressing with glee the drinking culture that they participate in, talking about drinking, starting drinking at 7 a.m., one young woman saying, I black out almost every time I drink.
That freedom, I mean— What alcohol does for my daughter is it allows her freedom, or she chases that illusion of freedom because, of course, as I've told you, her life is very small. She cannot function without a drink right now, so she does not leave her house. So how fun. But that feeling of being free to do anything you want to do, I'm going to go to town and I'm going to be somebody. That's what my husband said. I'm going to be somebody. And I feel for people that have to drink to that excess, because alcohol could be a very comfortable thing. You can make you comfortable in a situation, but when you go past that place, that's when you know, when the problems start.
We have a couple minutes left. Dr. Takis, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, you've given us a valuable sort of view of how changes happened at the ER. What do you see when you look into the future? Tom Rocklin was here. He was saying he hoped the University of Iowa would drop off and the party list. Now, University of Iowa, number two on that Princeton Review list. What else can be done?
I just think there has to be a continually look at the problem from the Johnson County Partnership for Alcohol Safety and the University of Iowa's Harm Committee that I'm a member of. They're constantly looking at data, talking to students, reaching out to parents, you know, and being selective on who they allow to enroll in the University of Iowa, too, is somewhat of a new thing to a certain extent. And so it's just a never-ending process. Alcoholism is never going to go away, and universities and communities need to look at it, you know, and constantly look, what can we do better.
Mm-hmm. If someone has a problem drinker in their life, what's the most effective form of intervention? Can you say a few words about that? Perhaps Lorraine, too, after Dr. Takish?
I think Alcoholics Anonymous is probably the most effective and having a supportive family or friends that can get you to an Alcoholics Anonymous to recognize that you do have a problem.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to someone who is listening to this, Lorraine, who has a loved one who is abusing alcohol?
Oh, just that we know how you feel. And Al-Anon has lots of meetings, and you can get online and go to which would be ia.alanon, which is al-anon.org, and you would be able to find an Al-Anon meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's for Alateens, which are children from probably 13 to 19.
And quickly, in case someone has an inhibition problem going to that first meeting, getting over that first hurdle, what is the atmosphere they will walk into?
Oh, you'll find people just like yourself. I mean, what a gift that is to walk into that room. I expected I would find people whose husbands lived under the bridge, which would mean that they'd be dirty and wouldn't have any money. I found people just like myself when I walked in that room.
Well, Lorraine, thank you for coming into our studio and sharing this so that others may learn. Thank you, Lorraine, in our Iowa City studio, Des Moines resident and Al-Anon member. Dr. Michael Takis, clinical associate professor of emergency medicine, ER physician at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Thank you again for coming in.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Help and aims from Garrett Van Leeuwen today. Also, John Pemble in Des Moines. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.